talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you statewide on Civic Media from Madison, Waukesha, Wausau, Wisconsin Rapids, and soon from a lot of other places. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits, and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history, going right to the front lines of history in the making. Some blockbuster news, frankly, from the Department of Justice on the Trump Mar-a-Lago document scandal. They filed a brief late yesterday. There's a hearing on Thursday. And this is that Judge Eileen Mercedes Cannon in Florida, a Trump appointee, very right wing, came from Colombia, born into an authoritarian culture, and apparently she hasn't forgot what she was born into. Said she may appoint a special master to look over the documents that were removed in the search warrant on August 8th. This brief was filed by the Justice Department, and it's a public brief. Anybody can read it. It has some really shocking revelations, and I don't use that term lightly. It said that they have evidence that Trump likely concealed and removed, quote unquote, classified documents at Mar-a-Lago, and that he did it prior to the raid. It's not really a raid, it's the execution of a search warrant. That he did it, he may be still doing it, but he did it even after documents were subpoenaed from him back in May. The filing yesterday said that the request to appoint a special master is unnecessary and would significantly harm important government interests, including national security interests, end quote. I'm going to say that again, quote, the request to appoint a special master is unnecessary and would significantly harm important governmental interests, including national security interests, end quote. Some of the documents that the FBI, this is also said in the brief, some of the documents that were found by the FBI in response to the search warrant were so sensitive that the FBI agents and the Department of Justice attorneys that were reviewing them needed additional security clearances even to review them. They had to be given new security clearances. The brief said that it was done by Trump to obstruct government investigation, and that he likely concealed and removed in the months leading up to the search other documents. They attached an FBI photo showing documents and classified cover sheets they found at Mar-a-Lago. Sometimes the cover sheet itself is classified. It might inadvertently give somebody a clue as to what was in it. Some of these cover sheets had the words, quote, 45 office, end quote. 45 office. What does that mean? Well, Trump was the 45th president. He said during the raid and several times to people before that, quote, they're mine. The documents, they're mine. Well, no, they're not his. They're ours. They're ours, and the National Archives administers them, and the NSA, the National Security Agency, and the CIA do their best to protect them. So does the State Department and the Department of Defense. According to the cover sheet, the cover photos that were submitted, some of these documents were labeled secret, some top secret, and some SCI. SCI stands for sensitive compartmented information. What does compartmented information mean? It means that its location and everything about it are so secret that if somebody who's entitled to see it, they have to see it in a certain location, a secure location. Or if it's the case of the president and it's brought to him with Eisenhower, the guy bringing it to him was handcuffed to the briefcase. They go into a room, Eisenhower look at him, make no copies, thank him, take no notes, and then hand it back to him. And the same with Joe Biden. Wherever Joe Biden is, if something comes in that he's got to see right away, a courier goes to him with SCI documents, a courier who has the highest form of security clearance, and the courier hands it to him, stays in his presence. Biden reads the document, hands it back to him, and the courier brings it back to where it should be. But two additional, I think, really blockbuster revelations about the search on August 8th were these. First of all, in the brief, the Department of Justice says that Trump lawyers explicitly prohibited FBI agents in June from looking inside a storage room, which turned out to have a lot of these top secret documents. Why is that a blockbuster revelation? Because in May, the grand jury subpoenaed Trump for all these documents. And, you know, the Republican leadership say, why didn't they just ask him? They asked him for too long. They asked him from January of 2021 to the FBI search warrant in August of 2022. That's 19 months they asked him for it. And they finally went in and met with him, the head guy of prosecutions at the Department of Justice on espionage and everything involving intelligence, a fellow named Bratt, B-R-A-T-T. He and some FBI agents met with Trump's people, and Trump's lawyer signed a written statement saying everything had been turned over. This is on June 3rd. That was false. But then the FBI said, can we look in this storeroom here? And they were prohibited from doing it, even though they were handed a document saying everything had been turned over. It turned out that when they got the search warrant, that was the only way they could get into that storeroom, that they found a lot of these documents. Now, here's the problem with all of this. They also subpoenaed surveillance video of the premises. In the third week in June, the surveillance video showed people going into that storeroom. Remember, they had been told on June 3rd, you can't look in that storeroom. They were given a document signed by Trump's lawyer saying everything has been turned over, which was false. They subpoena surveillance video. At the end of June, some of the segments showed people going into that same storeroom, bringing out boxes of documents, going through them, pulling out some documents, putting them in other boxes, and taking them away. So when the DOJ in this filing that just came in last night says that there is evidence that Trump removed and concealed even more secret documents than the ones they found in the raid on August 8th, that's borne out by all the evidence that's on video and in meetings with these people. You know, no, you can't go in that storeroom. Oh, but wait a minute, you just gave me a document that said you've given us everything. Yeah, so I've given you everything, so why should you look in the storeroom? Well, we just would like to look in the storeroom. You can't do it. What's in there? We're not telling you. Now, I have two questions, and these questions are going to be at the heart. Everything that I've just described is obstruction, a violation of the Espionage Act, and a violation of several other acts that are set out in the warrant. But I have two questions. The first question is, why did Trump do this? You know, it's one thing, a guy is angry he lost an election, and he goes in and he has his people and his secretaries, they take all his desk stuff and they throw it, you know, and signed pictures from foreign leaders and, you know, proclamations, you know, all this stuff. And maybe you throw in some stuff that turns out to be stuff you should not have taken. Okay. Immediately, the archive people contact you and say, you took stuff that shouldn't have been taken, give it back. Anybody in his right mind who'd been elected president of the United States, any president that I can think of in the history of the United States, would have said, oh, okay, why don't we come on down, take a look and see what it is, or I'll look through it, and you think I still have stuff? He stonewalled them for 19 months to the search. But unfortunately, stonewalled them beyond that because there are things he took that they can't find now. And then they keep going. And in January, he returns, I don't know, 15 boxes, torn stuff, shredded stuff, magazine articles, and some classified information. And they say, that's not everything. Oh, yes, it is. So they subpoena him in May of this year. They meet with him in June. They're given a document by his lawyer that says they've given him everything. Can I go into that storeroom? No, I can't. So they get a search warrant finally. And Lindsey Graham and Kevin McCarthy say all they had to do was ask. That's a flat-out lie. They asked for too long, for 19 months. The second thing, though, is I am beginning to think, when I look at this, that lawyer that signed that document should be prosecuted for obstruction. Anybody who tells law enforcement, the FBI qualifies as that, something that is untrue, that has been proven to be untrue in the search warrant execution, has committed a felony. I think Trump has got to be prosecuted. If this were a drug cartel or organized crime and you had 19 months of obstruction like that, they would have been prosecuted a long time. What people in the Republican leadership don't understand is what they're doing is that they were too deferential to Trump. He is not a normal president. He's not a patriot. Going to a break. Lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Director. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. Before we go to the lines, I want to finish up what I was saying in the first segment. I said I had two questions. First, why did Trump do this? Why did he go to these efforts in 19 months to conceal documents? And even after a search warrant, there are documents that he's hidden and taken somewhere. And frankly, even after the subpoena in May, he just told the FBI, you can't even look in that storeroom. And then at the end of June, he's taking stuff out and stuffing it in other boxes and taking it away. Why did he do it? Secondly, who's seen this stuff? Who's seen it? The only possible people who would be interested in seeing it are our enemies. Our enemies. Russia, China, North Korea, Iran. Maybe they use Cuba and Venezuela as surrogates to pretend to be pool boys, you know, walking around looking for stuff. But who else would want it? And some of these documents were on the floor, in a closet. They were in the dressing room of the bridal suite over the ballroom. That thing gets rented out. I mean, who, if you were given a document that said top secret SCI, and it said our agent in Moscow, even if it's just the initials, that's enough to kill him, reports that Putin's health is worse than people know and blah, blah, blah. You might go, well, what is this? But it doesn't interest you at all. It does not interest you at all. And if you had a nuclear document, you picked it up and you go, oh, wait a minute. This says that in the event of a nuclear attack in the United States, we have the ability to strike these targets in Russia. They're lightly defended. and under some circumstances, we would launch a preemptive strike. You know, you might think, oh, great, I'll write a short story about that. But you know who would really like to see that is Russia, or the same with China, North Korea, or Iran. Let's say with Iran. The Israelis are ready to bomb them because they're close to a nuclear weapon. Our official position is that we are not going to preemptively do anything. But if they start to wheel one of these things out, we will permit the Israelis and we will use our air power from the Sixth Fleet in the Mediterranean to go there and make sure they no longer have that capability. This is the kind of thing we're talking about. That's SCI. That's SCI. And who's paying for it? What is the object? Is it money? Is it blackmail? Trump's been supported by Russia financially for more than 20 years. His son, Eric, said that to a journalist. Trump's owed the Russians money. They bailed him out before when an oligarch bought a property of his in Palm Beach that's worth $50 million for $100 million. And then he took the gain on it and paid off some debts. And you know what the oligarch did? You think he developed a resort, tried to make money? No, he raised it, R-A-Z-E-D. He tore it down and left it as a parking lot. This is going on right under our nose. Going to the lines, Dick of Madison, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's in your mind today, Dick?
The passing of Gorbachev. It's interesting seeing how the news is covering this now. Here's what I don't want to see from Republicans, this bunch of Republicans right now. Don't be running around talking about how Reagan ended this. And first of all, I'm going to go to that, too. I think that he gets a little undue credit, and here's why. Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Ford, Carter, and their little excursion into Afghanistan. It was a war of attrition. We just outspent them, and that's all there is to it. He happened to be sitting in the chair at the time. But, you know, of course, they're dribbling over Reagan now, but I don't want this group doing that because none of them, some of them spend their 4th of July's in the Soviet Union, and others are big fans of Putin. So I don't want any of them standing around today and going, what a great guy Reagan was. Okay? They can just forget it.
Okay, I'll tell them. No, Dick, I'm on your side on that one. Let me just address that. As everybody knows, Mikhail Gorbachev died last night or yesterday. He was, 91, I think he was. And this is a guy, he's the guy that had a birthmark on his neck that looked like the country of Burma, which is now Myanmar. But he was a visionary. He was the first and last president of the Soviet Union. And he took steps to break up the Soviet Union. He is an historic figure. He developed a relationship with George H.W. Bush. And they wound down the occupation of Eastern Europe, Poland, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Hungary, Slovakia, Slovenia, the Czech Republic, all the rest of them. It was momentous. To pick up on what Dick is saying, the Chinese came out, their social media is full of attacks on Gorbachev, saying that he sold out Russia and he is a villain of history. Because right now, China is a fascist country. It's a communist country. All communism is fascist. Not all fascists are communism. Some of them are Nazis. In the Xi of China does not like to see any liberalizing of any economy, any reversion to democracy anywhere. So here's the deal. Russia is worse off today for having rejected Gorbachev's example. Gorbachev reached out to the West. Some of his ministers in his cabinet actually talked about Russia joining NATO. It would have been a tremendous thing because, frankly, Russia is the largest country by landmass in the world. It's 11 time zones. And it only has 145 million people and a lot of gas and oil. If they had become a democracy, they would have been a great buffer against China and North Korea, against all of the jihadist culture states to the south. Tremendous. And they have a European connection. Part of it is in Europe. In the 19th century, they produced some great musicians and authors. I'm going to talk a little more about Mikhail Gorbachev after the break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Back to Mikhail Gorbachev, truly historic figure. He was the head of the Communist Party. Then he became the first and last president of the Soviet Union. But he was a very insightful thinker and leader. He tried to turn Russia to the West, to liberalism, to capitalism. He reinstated private property in Russia. He reinstated freedoms in Russia, the ability to vote, took away the secret police in terms of kicking your door down at midnight and dragging you screaming into the night, that kind of thing. He told a close friend of his, it was just reported in July, that he was upset with the current state of Russia under Putin. He did not criticize Putin directly, but he told this very, very close friend, quote, "My life's work has been ruined. My life's work has been ruined." Most people point out to the fact that when Gorbachev was the president of the Soviet Union, the first and last one, NATO had only 4,000 troops stationed in Europe to deter a Russian attack. That's a token. It's no threat to Russia. That's just there they were. Now, because of Putin, that number is going to 300,000 by the end of next year. 300,000. There's going to be a permanent troop deployment in Poland. There's going to be permanent troops in Lithuania. Finland and Sweden had always been neutral when Gorbachev was in there. Finland has an 800-mile border with Russia. 800 miles. It's not quite like the U.S.-Canada, but or U.S.-Mexico, but it's pretty similar. 800 miles, a lot of border. In Sweden, to the north of Sweden in the Arctic Ocean, Russian ships, especially with global warming, ice, you know, the ice is melting and Russian ships keep prowling around there. But under Gorbachev, Sweden and Finland didn't have anything to do with NATO. Nothing. Nothing to do with NATO. Nothing. Nothing. And all that Putin has accomplished, he's a genocidal sadist, a rat-faced little pervert. All he has accomplished is to unify NATO, the West, and Europe, and even bring in Sweden and Finland into NATO. Their applications are in process. Adding over 1,000 miles of border, the 800 some odd in Finland, and then if you take a look at the Arctic Ocean north of Sweden, Russia could have encircled Europe if it had wanted to. But the point is this. In the early 1990s, Gorbachev's foreign minister and others had talks with NATO and the West about Russia joining NATO. I've been in Russia. I was in Russia when Boris Yeltsin was president in 1997. He was Gorbachev's protege. Gorbachev was very influential at the time. And it was great. Americans were going on vacation in St. Petersburg and Moscow. We went to the Bolshoi Ballet, greatest ballet in the world. We went to St. Petersburg, saw the Winter Palace, and I'll tell you what, we saw where the Nazis had camped out and besieged St. Petersburg for 3 years. People died of starvation. The only way that they ever got any food was during the winter. There's a lake there that freezes. The Nazis hadn't encircled that lake, and they'd bring provisions in, but people would kill each other over food. They committed cannibalism. And, you know, the Nazis were only like 20 miles away. I mean, their technology was not what it was today, but that would be like there were Nazis, say, in Waukesha besieging Milwaukee. I mean, quite literally. And these people had to live with that for 3 years. There's a book called A Thousand Days by Harrison Salisbury that describes it. If you have any interest in World War II history, you got to read that book. It's really chilling. But in any event, Thousand Days by Harrison Salisbury. But anyway, Gorbachev said, my life's work is ruined. It's ruined. My life's work is ruined. And now there are going to be 300,000 NATO troops. And Russia's proven they've already lost 60,000 troops in Ukraine. They're being killed at will. They are genocidal sadists. They're launching missiles into apartment buildings and schools. But there are a lot of good people in Russia. There are also a lot of Nazis in Russia. They don't call themselves Nazis. They used to call themselves communists. Now it's organized crime. They put the butcher of Syria, this guy's name, Dvornikov, in charge of being the butcher of Ukraine. And I don't know what Putin was thinking, but you're just going to genocide and butcher fellow Slavic peoples who are also in the eastern part of the country Orthodox, many of them Russian Orthodox. In other words, they answer to the Russian church, but they're killing Russians because they want their own country. And in the West, it's Catholic. And Putin wants to go in and do to them what he did to all of Eastern Europe and Russia did since the Second World War, which is kill their clergy and try to eradicate them. There's a Jekyll and Hyde thing. Russia's Jekyll and Hyde. When they're at their best, the 19th century, they produce Dostoevsky, Pushkin, Tchaikovsky, a lot of other people. But then the 20th century, they killed them in Stalin's death camps, and Putin's killing them. And now they're producing nothing. They're of no value whatsoever. And the genocidal sadists have taken over that country. And that's why you have the Chinese under Xi undoing all of the reforms that have been done in China for the last 30 years. They had finally come around to a liberal capitalist system, not liberal democracy, but capitalist system where you could have private property and you could make money, and their economy went through the roof. But now there's a guy named Jack Ma, M-A, who is sort of like an Elon Musk and Bill Gates combined. He's a great businessman, made a lot of money. Xi had him arrested, thrown in jail and beaten, and now he's come out. The fire's gone out of his eyes, and because Xi was afraid that this guy would end up being more popular than Xi. Who knows? But remember something, that country has been ruled by an emperor for 5,000 years. 5,000 years, you had a guy, and most of it, you said he was God, and if you looked at him, they'd execute you. If you looked at him, they carry him on a thing through the street, and you got to lie down and stick your eyes right in the dirt and not look up. That's what they're used to. And the communist boss is the same thing, except this time, the Communist Police Bureau in China has over 300 people, and all of them want Xi's action. They would kill him for a bottle of horseradish if they could get away with it. And so you've heard the phrase, uneasy lies the head that wears the crown. Part of the Sword of Damocles, that story is where the king's sitting there, and it looks great, he's king, but he has a sword hung over his head, then a very thin little thread, and if it ever breaks, he's dead, and that's what a king is. And Xi knows it. Xi knows it. So he's rounding up and killing, or at least locking up and beating and ruining anybody he can get his hands on who might oppose him. That is the situation. Mikhail Gorbachev, great man. Putin, a Stalin wannabe, genocidal sadist and thief. And frankly, I'm going to say this again. Biden's done a great job putting together a NATO coalition against Russia. When Trump was set to take us out of NATO and turn over Eastern Europe back to the Ruskies. But we have got to give Ukraine more than we're giving them. We've got to give them the 300-mile range missiles, not the 50-range HIMARS. 300-mile range missiles, and we've got to give them F-16 planes. And they can just impose a no-fly zone over Ukraine. Russian pilots are no good. They're afraid. They don't want to go there. This genocide has got to stop. You can't stand on the sidelines and watch them genocide people just because they were interested at one time in joining NATO. You can't do it. You can't do it. And you can't wait for another Gorbachev in Russia. This is something, it's very similar to the reversion to Stalin. He's starting with Ukraine. He'll extend it to Moldova. Then he's going to extend it to Estonia and Latvia because they have Russian speakers near the Russian border. The Russian speakers don't want to be part of Russia. Oh, you speak Russian? Grab them and drag them into Russia. Glad Joe Biden is the president, but I'll tell you what, Joe, get them the planes and get them the 300-mile range missiles. Get them to them now. Get them to them now. R.I.P. Mikhail Gorbachev. I'm going to start talking about a segment that is the highest importance. It was set for the 6:30 segment today, but Mikhail Gorbachev passed away, and we have to honor his memory and discuss his memory. And this is Tony Ornato retires. Okay, Tony Ornato. Who's Tony Ornato? Tony Ornato, you may remember the testimony of Cassidy Hutchinson back in June, where she said that the head of the Secret Service detail named Tony Ornato for Trump told her that they refused to drive him to the Capitol. He lunged at the steering wheel. He said, take me up there. He was very angry. And Tony Ornato has not responded to that publicly. Through intermediaries, they say, we believe he would deny that, but he won't talk. He won't talk. He was on Trump's Secret Service detail when Trump was president, and then Trump liked him so well, he's a Trumper, made him deputy chief of staff. Well, the chief of staff is the guy who runs everything. The deputy is a very influential position. Grab a guy off the Secret Service detail. What Trump was doing was grabbing a loyalist who would do anything for Trump. But it's quite chilling when you think about the following. Do you recall that the Secret Service said that they can't find texts and emails back in January 6th and 5th because in a routine cleansing, they cleanse them? And they said this not too long after January 5th and 6th. And Tony Ornato concealed that, and people loyal to Trump concealed it from the DOJ and from the commission, the January 6th special commission. Well, I'll tell you what, I think it's beginning to look as if there were people, not all of them, many Secret Service people are fine people, and Trump has a Biden has a Secret Service detail, and they protect presidents. But there are some rotten apples, and here's what happened. There was an agreement, you know, part of the coup to turn over the election to the House of Representatives and have them pick the fake electors. Remember that? Part of this coup was that they said that Pence is not going to be able to even be there to accept the certification, so we're going to quick go to the House of Representatives. Well, first of all, Pence, the role of the vice president is ceremonial. He could die, he could dress in a monkey suit, and some guy comes in with a velvet pillow and these documents, he goes, Your Excellency, this is right out of like England, about Your Excellency, here are the certifications from the 50 states, Secretary of States and Governors, Democrats and Republicans, and here's what they say. And it says that Joe Biden won the Electoral College. These clowns in the Trump administration thought, well, if we kidnap Mike Pence and take him off somewhere and he's not physically there, well, they'll go around and go, he can't do it. So therefore, they haven't been accepted. Therefore, quick, let's go to the House of Representatives. That is what was planned. Because you may remember, Ornato said to Pence, get into this limousine. And Pence says, I'm not getting in that limousine. And Ornato said, we're going to take you to a military base in Maryland. Oh, sure they were. They're going to take him to a military base in Maryland. And he'd be incommunicado because the insurrectionists. And then he'd be thrown in the House of Representatives. And there's another guy, we're going to talk about this a little more after the break, Keith Kelsey, who said to Ornato, you can't do that, stop it. This to Ornato, leave him alone. He's got a job to do. I know you guys well. You'll fly him to Alaska if you have a chance. Don't do it, end quote. We're going to a break, a lot more after the break. 844-967-2789.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Director. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. I can't overstate the importance of what the Secret Service, some of them, not all of them, tried to do on January 6th. I can't overstate that importance. Tony Ornato is a Trumper. Tony Ornato is the head of Trump's Secret Service detail and also his deputy chief of staff. He was loyal to Trump. On January 6th, there was a car. Trump said, take me to the Capitol. Ornato said, we're not, sir. It's too dangerous. There are people with weapons. We're taking you back to the White House. Trump lunged at the wheel, was angry. But they took him back to the Capitol. And Tony Ornato said this to Cassidy Hutchinson. Cassidy Hutchinson testified in June, and then Tony Ornato went silent. He went silent, crickets. And then occasionally somebody who knew him would say, well, I think Tony says that didn't happen. But Tony will now not talk to the January 6th Commission. The January 6th Commission wants to know something a lot more important than whether Trump lunged at the steering wheel. That's trivial compared to what they want to know about. Because the Secret Service, and remember their texts and their emails for January 5th and 6th have mysteriously disappeared because they were cleansed in a normal cleansing, a normal cleansing. And what did happen, we know what happened, from testimony of others, is that Ornato and the Secret Service said to Pence, oh, sir, we have to protect you. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. So please get in this limousine. And Pence said, I'm not getting into that car. The January 6th Commission wants to know whether elements in the Secret Service were planning to momentarily kidnap Pence for his quote own safety, end quote, and take him to Camp David or somewhere in Maryland, a Maryland military facility, and say, sir, for your own benefit, you can't be there. But that would mean that he wasn't there to receive the electoral votes on the assigned day. And that is a ceremonial position. It doesn't matter who accepts them. Nobody has to accept them. They were all sent in to the National Archives in the Senate. They could have been read by the President of the Senate. And I'm not talking here about the vice president who cast the tie-breaking vote, but the senior senator gets up there and he goes, here they are, and here's the count, and that's it. That happened for all the previous years of our presidency. But Pence knew that they would kidnap him. When I say kidnap, I don't mean hold him for ransom. I mean take him away so that he couldn't physically be there to get the count. And he told Keith Kelsey, who was a functionary in the government, who was there. And this is Ornato as well, that he'd be transferred to a military facility. And Kelsey said to Ornato, quote, you can't do that, Tony. This is a direct quote. This is what Kelsey testified to. Leave him where he's at. He's got a job to do. I know you guys too well. You'll fly him to Alaska if you have a chance. Don't do it. Now, first of all, what is this? What is this? Why were the emails and texts deleted from the Secret Service on January 5th and 6th? Because it would show which Secret Service agents were clean and which were dirty. And who were the dirty ones who said, look, you know, POTUS wants Pence out of there, and this insurrection is a smokescreen, and for his quote-own safety, end quote, we're going to hustle him to some rural area in Maryland and hold him for a day for his own, quote, safety, end quote, so he can't receive the electoral votes. That's what's being stonewalled. That's the cover-up. That's why Ornato won't talk to the January 6th Commission, and that's why these tweets and emails from January 5th and 6th were deep sex in a, quote, routine cleansing. But everybody saw through it. I mean, Pence saw through it. He said, I'm not getting in that car. He didn't say that because he thought there was a bomb in the car. If he'd been alarmed and he thought everybody's in good faith, he would have gotten into the car. But he said, I'm not getting into that car. Ornato, and Pence knew this, told Keith Kelsey that he be that Pence would be transferred to a military facility in Maryland. Kelsey's already testified to the January 6th commission. And he said, quote, you can't do that, Tony. Leave him where he's at. He's got a job to do. I know you guys too well. You'll fly him to Alaska if you have a chance. Don't do it, end quote. That is a part of the coup that had not really been disclosed or discussed a lot up till now. It hadn't been disclosed up till now. Some of the pieces of it were known, especially during the January 6th commission hearings. But this was an attempt to kidnap the vice president for a brief period of time, not hurt him, but make it impossible for him to be there in the Senate to accept the electoral votes. And Trump was prepared to say, well, technically, if they're not accepted, we can throw it in the House of Representatives and overturn an election that I lost by 7 million popular votes and 74 electoral votes. Everybody would be outraged, but it would have to go to the courts. And if it went to the courts, the Supreme Court, 6-3, is Republican. They're not elected, and there's nothing in the Constitution that says they have the power to do anything they've been doing. There's nothing in the Constitution that says the Supreme Court can overturn any act of Congress or question any act of Congress. But over 200 years of jurisprudence, they've gradually, because of the evolution of our economy and society and its size, people have essentially grudgingly agreed that they should be able to do some things. And now they're going too far. Now you have a judge down in Florida saying she may turn over our most secret documents to a Trump-approved, quote, special master, end quote, who may say, well, these are Trump's property and return them to Trump. And you have a Secret Service, some rotten ones, and possibly judges who would have backed them up, saying just if we remove the vice president, we can change presidents. Now, you would say, look, anybody with common sense would go, this idea of, quote, receiving the electoral votes, end quote, is a ministerial function. In other words, it doesn't require discretion. It doesn't require any judgment. You could literally dress a monkey, or you could dress a Revolutionary War impersonator in a costume and have them take it. But why do you even have to have the vice president receive them? They should be sent into the archives, and then that's it. And they were, and into the Senate. But this technicality, combined with the fact that they have hijacked the Supreme Court and much of the federal judiciary, is resulted in a circumstance where they could have upended our democracy that day and put Trump back in. And once he was back in through court appeals for a year or two, they go, oh, well, keep him in another 2 years. Now you know the rest of the story. Now you know what happened, the attempted kidnapping of Mike Pence. Going to break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Hey, I will stand my ground, and I won't back down. No, I won't back down.